Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at tanger.com.
Wake up with the news and information you can trust. Starting your day the right way with the Andy Griffin Show. This is News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU.
Happy Friday to you, 908 on KDXU. I'm Andy Griffin. Mello is here. I think you're here, Mello.
Yeah, good morning.
Yay, I can hear your voice. That's good. Mello, I'm feeling kind of vindicated today. I'm feeling kind of justified, kind of happy.
Oh.
Because there's an official study out now by Harvard about dark chocolate. Now, if you were to ask anybody that knows me, what's Andy's favorite treat in the whole world? It's dark chocolate.
I love
dark chocolate in any form I can get it. In fact, my sweet wife ordered some pedophores. You ever had a pedophore? You know what that is?
No, it doesn't. It sounds like a skirt. I don't know what it is.
It's French. It's P-E-T-I-T. Petit is how they say pedophore. And then F-O-R-S. Pedophore. Anyway, it is a little mini cake about the size of, I don't even know, like a square of chocolate, only thicker.
Mm-hmm.
And it has chocolate on the outside, and my wife ordered some with dark chocolate, and they're amazing.
So is it like spongy? Like, what's the texture on the inside?
Yeah, it's like cake and a layer of frosting, and then all of it's enrobed in chocolate. It's like a truffle only with cake on the inside.
Hmm.
So, yeah, it's pretty epic. Anyway, back to the dark chocolate. I'm going to read you this. A new study out of Harvard's Chan School of Public Health finds that people who ate dark chocolate compared to other types or none at all, no chocolate at all, who I can't even imagine a world without chocolate, but anyway, had up to a 21% lower chance of developing diabetes. There was also no evidence that the chocolate was associated with any weight gain whatsoever, but as with all things, the study's authors stress moderation is important, so don't eat chocolate every meal all day long. They also note that the study doesn't account for things like the possibility that people who consume dark chocolate are more health conscious and healthier lifestyle habits. I don't know if that's true or not, but
I think I like the taste of dark chocolate.
Oh yeah, me too. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
dark but chocolate. I think it depends on what is with the dark chocolate, like if it's caramel or if it's nuts or if it's
I agree. You know what's funny is
sugar.
We all love Reese's peanut butter cups, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's like the most popular candy in the world right now. I actually don't like dark chocolate. Let me say it this way. I don't love dark chocolate Reese's peanut butter cups. I like milk chocolate peanut butter cups.
True. I don't like the dark chocolate ones either.
Yeah. I don't know why that is, because I love dark chocolate and I love peanut butter, but for whatever reason, that marriage there just doesn't quite work.
No, like caramel and salt with the dark
chocolate. Oh, yeah. Sea salt. Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. We're making ourselves hungry, aren't we? Anyway, the bottom line, dark chocolate, good for you. Go ahead and eat it in moderation because it's actually good for you. Studies have shown the antioxidants in it also help prevent cancer.
Yeah, so. I can't wait till there's a study about soda.
Oh, there's studies about soda, but you're not going to like the results.
Okay, I'll try.
All right, so today is December 6th. That means tomorrow is December 7th. And everybody's like, okay, so what, Andy? You can do math. Very good. Tomorrow is Pearl Harbor Day.
Mm.
And if you do the math, that's, 83 years since Pearl Harbor attack. And I thought, you know, even though we're not going to be here on Pearl Harbor Day, I thought it was appropriate to play a little Pearl Harbor tribute during this segment of the show. It's not very long. It's only 2 minutes and 20 seconds long. So check this out. I think this is really cool. That's an airplane, by the way.
On Sunday, December 7th, 1941, shortly before 8 a.m., Japan launched a surprise attack on the United States of America by bombing the U.S. naval base at Pearl Harbor, Hawaii. The base was attacked by 350 Imperial Japanese aircrafts. Though the raid only lasted 75 minutes, the Japanese destroyed or damaged nearly 20 American naval vessels, including 8 battleships and more than 340 airplanes. Over 2,400 Americans died in the attack, and many more were wounded. While the attack on Pearl Harbor was a surprise, Tensions between the U.S. and Japan had deteriorated over the decade, in particular with regards to Japan's expansion into China. The plan for attacking Pearl Harbor was to destroy the U.S.'s Pacific Fleet, a move which would give the Japanese time to carry out its plans to keep control of the Pacific without U.S. interference. The shock of the attack without declaration of war enraged the American public and rallied the nation to get behind a war many hoped to avoid. At the beginning of his speech to Congress requesting a declaration of war, President Franklin D. Roosevelt delivered this now famous line.
Yesterday, December 7, 1941, a date which will live in infamy, the United States of America was suddenly and deliberately attacked by naval and air forces of the Empire of Japan.
On December 8, 1941, one day after the attack, the United States Congress declared war on Japan, officially entering World War II.
So Mello, I'm going to turn that down now. That's pretty much the end of it. We're getting to that point now in history that there aren't a lot of people alive that would remember this. You and I weren't alive, obviously. Mm-hmm. My dad, who was 89, was only, 6 years old, I think, at the time. And most of the World War II veterans, sadly, have now passed on. At the time, it was a period in our country's history in which a lot of people were patriotic. They wanted to go out and help the good guys win the war, right?
Exactly.
And we don't have that anymore, sadly. I don't think. I think people maybe you're my age on up are very patriotic and love our country. But I see a lot of young people are like, hey, I ain't fighting no war. Mm-hmm. There's no way.
Yeah, it's true. It's a different breed of people that we're raising, and I feel slightly responsible because I've raised like this last couple generations.
Yeah,
and I don't know, I was Generation X, and we were tougher. Like, we actually, if we didn't get our assignments in, they didn't have a grace period to get your assignments turned in. And now they have a grace period, and as long as you get it in by the end of the semester, we won't even cut off any of your points. Like, there's no accountability. And I feel like maybe I tried to do too much for my kids. And then that made them softer. And I don't know what caused all the anxiety. I have 3 of my 7 kids have really bad anxiety and are medicated for it. Like, wow. I don't know what. I wish I could figure out what it is.
What did I do?
That is causing these snowflakes, because I feel like individually I'm tough. I can do things, but my
tough
kids are not.
I wouldn't mess with
you. No, I could take somebody out if I wanted to. But they're just not tough. And I worry for another war what that would mean to America.
Yeah. No.
Because who would fight
it? I agree. I don't know. I think there was this great yearning in our generation, Mello, of wanting our kids to have a better life than we had, wanting our kids to have more opportunities, wanting our kids to have, as simple as, like, we couldn't afford, I wanted this really cool electric racetrack. Remember the little race cars that go around and start? We couldn't afford one.
Mm.
I never had one until I was a little bit older and bought it myself. And I wanted my kids to have that. And so I did everything I could to make sure they had that. And was that the problem? In my desire to make their lives better, did I then spoil them and ruin them? I don't know.
I know. I have been really self-reflecting on what I did, because one of my daughters she's like, well, you were born back in the 1900s, so you wouldn't understand. I'm like, oh, girl, please stop with that. So I know. It's the rudest thing.
You feel so old.
Yeah. I know. I just don't know, what self-reflecting. As a parent, I feel like one of my lines to my kids was, suck it up, buttercup. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
you can do this. And they would laugh, wouldn't they?
They would
laugh at you.
Yeah, they're like, you don't understand my anxiety, and you don't understand where I'm at, and I need to talk to a therapist. And I'm like, what? Like, just do it.
Yeah.
Just do it.
I remember, I've told the story before, but I was playing football for West Jordan High School. We went up to Bear River. And the quarterback for Bear River was Rod Zundel, who is a local sportscaster, was a longtime sportscaster for Channel 5, so we're about the same age. But I remember, so I'm the defensive end on the left side of the field, and I get past the offensive tackle and go rushing in to get the quarterback. And I have him in my sights. I come barreling in as fast as I can. Well, at the last second, he sees me and kind of jumps back and then circles back around the way that I had come. Well, undaunted, I was like, oh, I'm still going to get him. So I wheeled around and chased after him at a full sprint while he rolled around the right side. And the guy, the offensive tackle that I had beaten, was also undaunted, if you will. And he's like, okay, I didn't block him very well the first time. I'm not going to miss this one. Well, I never saw him. All I saw was the quarterback. I was full speed. I was going after that quarterback. And this dude cracked back. They call it a cracked back block. This dude laid me out. And I remember laying on the ground, face down, laying on the ground. And at the time, Bear Rivers football field was under construction. Mm-hmm. And so we were playing on their rodeo grounds.
Oh, no.
And I remember laying on the ground, and it was dirt. And it smelled like cow manure. And that's not what I said. I said, I remember thinking in my head, why am I laying here smelling crap?
Yeah.
What is going on here? So anyway, the play was over. I'm laying on the ground face down. I think I may have lost consciousness for a few seconds. Yeah. I don't know. But they came out and helped me up, and they started helping me off the field. I remember the first two or three steps I took toward the wrong sideline.
Oh, no.
Because that's how messed up I was. And anyway, they got me turned around, helped me to the sideline, and three plays later, they put me back in the game. They said, rub some dirt on it. Nobody said literally rub some dirt on it, but that was the feeling. Rub some dirt on it and get back out there. Of course, now you have the concussion protocol and you have all the stuff they do now. But
exactly.
Yeah, back then it was, you know, just get over it.
No. And when my kids would cry for things that they wanted, I would sing that Rolling Stones song to them. You can't always get what you want.
You can't always get what you want.
And all the other kids would join in and kind of taunting them. Maybe that's what I did. I caused all
the anxiety. There you go. There's the anxiety right there. You taunting your children.
Yeah. And my great-grandmother used to say when you'd get upset, she would say, go scratch your mad spot. So whenever my kids come to me and say they're mad, I'm like, go scratch your mad spot. They're like, I don't have a spot. I'm like, it's right there. And I'll, like, scratch their arm. Yeah, maybe my taunting did it.
So one of the things about, you know, I was thinking about this, would our kids would they go to war? Would they fight for this country, fight for freedom? And I don't know that they would, but, you know, I'm just thinking about these kids. Would they do that? Would they not do that? And I kind of lost my thought here on the main point I was going to make. But the big thing is I don't know that we as parents prepared them for that kind of thing. You know?
And I don't know what to do different. And that's what I'm, because I still have one more chance. I have a 7-year-old, right?
Yeah.
So I have another chance to not blow it. And I'm just like, what can I do? First of all, I'm not getting him a phone. He's not getting a phone, but his dad's kind of ruined that by letting him use his phone check the stats. I know.
Yeah. Well, your husband's never been a dad before, so for him, this is a first time thing.
I know, but I don't know. I really do want to not spoil. Well, he's going to be spoiled because he's an only child for my son or for my husband, but so, I don't know. We'll figure it out.
So over the years, I've been a sports writer for 30 years, covered, you know, for Deseret News, Salt Lake Tribune. I've had stories in the LA Times and different magazines, sport magazine, and so I've covered a lot of sports over the years. And I've come to know a lot of coaches. And of course, coaches have had to change over the years as kids have changed. But back in the day, there was basically two kinds of coaches. There was the disciplinarian. And there was the player's coach.
Mm.
And the disciplinarian was basically, I'm the coach, you're the player, you do what I say. If you don't do what I say, you're not going to play, you're not going to be on the team, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
The player's coach was, I'm your buddy. You know, you're going to do all the things I ask you to do because you like me so much.
Mm-hmm. We're friends.
We're friends. We're buddies. Now, I saw both kind of coaches be successful. So I'm not knocking the one kind of coaching because I've seen them be successful using that way.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen over the years, you classify them, I'm stereotyping. There's a little bit of player's coach in a disciplinarian, and there's a little bit of disciplinarian in a player's coach. But for the most part, those are the two areas. So I guess what I'm saying is as parents, what should we be? Should we be the player's coach? Should we be the disciplinarian?
I know it's so hard because I've done it, like with different kids and their their personalities, I've done it different ways, right? Because some of them really, really thrive in that structure, and other ones get broken by that structure. So it's really hard to know which way to go. And I obviously am not successful in all of my endeavors with that. So I don't know.
Well, you got to be tough on kids. And I, you know, as far as the phone thing, Mike, I made him, you know, maybe this will help you a little bit. I actually wrote a contract, and I said, here's the things that I'm providing for you, the phone, I'm paying the bill, all this stuff. Here's the things that you are responsible for if you're going to have a phone. You know, first of all, we didn't get him phones till they were 16, with the exception of my youngest daughter, who somehow adopted our home cell phone as hers, but that's a whole other story altogether. And part of it was they would dock their phones every single night in a central location in the kitchen. They could not take their phones into their bedrooms ever, period.
Oh, ever?
Ever.
I just have it at night. She can't take it in her room.
No, ours were, there is nothing on that phone that you should be hiding from me. And if you're going back into your bedroom with your phone, you know, to do whatever, you're hiding something.
Oh, I just think of like a private conversation, like when you used to have the cord and you'd hide it under the laundry room door and go in the other room to talk. I just think of it like a privacy talking on the phone.
Yeah. You know, and when my sons broke the contract, I took their phones away. Sometimes it was, you know, if it was a minor infraction, a day or a week, and sometimes it was a month, and I don't, I never took them away permanently because they knew there were certain things you don't do or you're never getting your phone back, but they did learn to follow the rules. And I said, look, your name is on that contract. I made them sign. You want a phone? Sign that, you know, read it and sign it. And that was a pretty cool deal because I didn't have to. Well, you're just making this up, Dad. No, I didn't have to make stuff up. I said, look, contract, see, black and white right here. You signed. This is what it said. So it actually took some of the, because I said so stuff out of it.
But back to the military part of it, what do you think would happen if there was a draft? Like if, because, I mean, didn't Biden just let them attack Russia? Ukraine? Like if there was a draft... Like, what would happen with the youth of today in the military?
Are we, you know, they instituted the draft back in the Vietnam War. And there were what they called conscientious objectors, people that refused to, and they went to jail. There were others who claimed they couldn't go because of religious beliefs. And I think a lot of those got off. But, that was a big deal. And this was, you know... 60 years ago, 55 years ago. What do I think would happen? I don't know. I think that they couldn't. Those of us that are willing to serve, I would go on in a heartbeat, but the problem is I would be a target. I would be a slow-moving, easy-to-hit target. So we need young, youthful, athletic people. The other thing you can maybe throw in there, Mello, is, okay, say they agreed to go, but how many of our kids? We went from like 10% of kids out of shape, fat, for lack of a better word, to it's up to like 60% of children under the age of 16 are overweight, or under the age of 18 are overweight, to the point of obesity. And, you know, well, we'd have to really whip them into shape, wouldn't we?
I know. That's a whole nother conversation for the foods that are available, too. Like, there's so many different things that are impacting this. So, I mean, I did have a daughter that served in the Navy. And I was actually surprised, but she did pretty well. She was a yeoman, so she was administratively in charge of all the workings on the ship as far as the paperwork. And that served her well after when she got out. So there are different things you can do in the military that'll help you on the other side, too.
I have, it's a long text, so I'm not going to read it, but a text recounting a story about Pearl Harbor and World War II. And I it's so long I don't have time to even read it myself, but it's something, I think, you know, I think we're losing it a little bit, the sense of history. That even 9/11, 2001, that was 23 years ago.
Oh, don't say that.
Yeah, 23 years ago, I think. If you think about now adults, not just little kids, adults under the age of 25 have no recollection of that. They have no memory of it. And it's up to us to try to help them understand. And just like it was up to my parents, or maybe their parents, to help us understand about World War II.
The only thing about that is, as a mother of liberal daughters, Like, I've tried. Like, I'm very patriotic. I have a huge 4th of July breakfast every year. I was a military spouse for 20 years. My grandpa served in World War II. My ex-husband served in the military. My daughter served in the military. I love the military and I love this country. But the things that they're learning on Instagram and TikTok are very anti-American, I would say, because one of my daughters, she's like, why would I want to live in America? I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, why wouldn't you want to live in America? But she's been brainwashed.
She's not been out of the country, has she?
No.
Yeah.
That's valid. She has not.
Tell her to spend a week in Ukraine and then come back and see if she'll still ask that same question.
I think she would like to live in Canada or something. I don't know. Yeah. But it's just, I think they're being indoctrinated by this system that feeds you. Like, if you have one idea that's maybe a little left or a little off the mainstream, then it's going to feed you another one and then another one. And then you're rabbit holing, and then everything you're seeing is identifying that belief that you initially said. And then it's just taking you further and further off just by a few degrees. But you're really off.
You're right. You're absolutely right. And it's kind of sad because kids aren't watching the news. And I didn't watch the news much when I was a kid, but I heard about the news from my parents. They don't watch that anymore. They get their news from TikTok, from social media, from Insta, and Snapchat, and the different, you know, social media is, that's the only place they're hearing news.
Exactly.
And if that's the only place they're getting their news, we're in trouble.
Right, but it's filtered for their already left beliefs, or their already LGBTQ belief, or their already anti-American belief. Like, it's feeding whatever vein you're in. That's why it applies to so many people, because you can also be on the other side of that coin and enjoy it and think that this is the news everybody's getting, but it's just for you. That's why it's called a just for you page. It's just for you.
Just for you. Yeah. All right, Mel, got to get a weather break in. When we come back, I want to play a really great video, audio obviously here on radio, of one of our senators getting after the airline industry. Now, if you've taken a flight any time in the last, well, forever, but certainly in the last decade, they get you with junk fee. They call them junk fees and upgrades. And say you want an extra 4 inches of leg room. Oh, that's only $79. Say you want, you know, it's unbelievable. What, you know, if your bag is 2 centimeters too big, oh, there's an extra $50, you know, whatever. It's unbelievable. Anyway, I've got a senator grilling the CEOs of the airlines, and it's pretty good. And kudos to Bill Hoster for posting this video online, because it is good. We'll check that out when we come back.
Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
Welcome back. I'm Andy Griffin. Thanks for tuning into the show today. If you'd like to call, 673-5890 is the phone number. You can also text us anytime you want. I'm pushing the wrong button. You can text us anytime you want at 467-5842. Those are both 435 area codes. So call at 673-5890. Text at 467-5842. A couple of news items, Mello, that I wanted to get to before we play this little 4-minute audio. Okay, the question I would throw out there before I read you this story is, how bad does a sin or a crime have to be an unforgivable crime or sin? Uh-huh. And then let me read the story to you now. A German court says a former guard at a Nazi concentration camp is fit to stand trial. Earlier this year, a regional court decided that 100-year-old Gregor Formanek was not fit to stand trial due to his mental condition. On Tuesday, a higher court in Frankfurt overturned that decision. Formanek is accused of aiding and abetting over 3,300 murders while working at the Sachsenhausen concentration camp near Berlin during World War II. Of course, over 200,000 people, including Jews, gays, and opponents of Nazis, were held at that camp. All right, dude's 100 years old. I have no idea the mental condition of the guy. It sounds like he is at least competent to be held trial. I have no idea how he has acted and behaved in the last, I mean, it's been 80 years since World War II, right? So should we be putting this 100-year-old dude on trial for 2,000 murders? What do you think?
That's a hard one.
It is.
That's super hard. Gosh. Because I don't know. Like, yes. Like, yes, ethically, he did that. He should be accountable. Yes. But then there's the humanity side of it. This 100-year-old man, probably a great-great-grandpa by now, probably hasn't done anything like that. And then with the political climate of that time, did he just kind of get wrapped up in that and was just kind of doing what he was told and not really the spearheader behind it, but following orders? So
a major ethical dilemma.
Oh, gosh, that hurts my heart. I don't know.
We talk about the what's unforgivable, right? Is murder unforgivable? Well, yeah, murder kind of is unforgivable. Right?
Yeah,
that's my belief. So if he actively participated in this, the thing we don't know, and this story does not even address this, is what was his life like after that? Did he spend the last 80 years since he was part of this, 76 years, whatever it is, doing good in life, trying to make up for what he did? Did he feel guilty about what happened? Did he, maybe like you said, he was just following orders, and once he got out of that setting and was able to act as his own man and not a member of the military, did he then try to be a good person who tried to help people his whole life? We don't know that.
Mm-hmm.
And even if he did, I know there are people listening, and maybe I feel this way a little. Even if he did spend his whole life trying to make amends, can you make amends for 2,200 murders or whatever it was?
I don't think you can. I don't think you can.
I don't think 3,300, by the way, not 22, but I don't think you can either. 3,300 lives that maybe he wasn't directly responsible for, but was involved in the snuffing out of those lives of 3,300 people who we never know what their life would have been like.
Yeah. No, I guess, like, so, in that sense, like, yes, you're accountable.
Yeah.
You're accountable, even if you're a settled grandpa.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. I want to play this again. Bill Hauser posted this video on social media. If you've traveled on an airplane recently, especially, they get you for everything. They are charging you fees for this, that. I mean, if you say you go online and say, hey, I found a great deal on a flight. Well, then all of a sudden there's fees for, if you want to check a bag. There's a fee if you want a little bit of extra legroom. There's a fee if you want to reserve your seat, because a lot of places you can't reserve a seat unless you pay extra. And so this is a guy by the name of, oh, shoot, what is his first name? I had that called up here a second ago. I'm gonna get you his first name. Somewhere I have it. Oh, Josh Howley. Josh Howley is a senator from Missouri. He's a pretty young guy, 45-year-old senator. He's already the senior senator. He's been in the Senate for 5 years. Josh Howley addressed the CEOs of several airlines, including Delta, Frontier, Spirit, American. And this is what he had to say. This, folks, this is good. This is calling it like it. Oh, wait, I got to turn the other thing off first. I do that sometimes. I leave a video open, and it just goes and goes and goes and goes. And so I have a video that's open. I got to close. Okay, now I close it. All right, here's Josh Howley.
I mean, you guys do appreciate that flying on your airlines is a disaster, don't you? I'm slightly amazed by the general attitude of all of you here. Flying on your airlines is horrible. It's a terrible experience. I mean, I say this as a father of three young children. But I can't tell you, Mike, nobody enjoys flying in your airlines. It's a disaster.
That's true.
You charge people fees that they know nothing about. You harass them to death. I'll never forget, Mr. Johnson, during COVID, when an attendant on your airline threatened my wife because our then 5-year-old son, his mask had slipped. This is back when we all had to wear those ridiculous masks. His mask had slipped below his nose. This flight attendant came up to my wife and said if she didn't keep that mask over his nose at all points on this 4-hour flight, she would personally see that my wife was banned from flying. This has happened over and over to families. It's terrible. It's absolutely terrible. And your attitude here today seems to be, well, devil may care. There's nothing we can do about it. Well, I think we are going to do something about it. So how much have you paid people to pull out customers who are in line with a bag that's 2 centimeters too big, Mr. Schroeder?
Well, we recognize this is a hard job, and so therefore we incentivize them to do that.
How much?
It's $10 per bag.
Wow, $10 per bag. And I think, Mr. Klein, you and Mr. Schroeder, your airlines cumulatively have spent $26 million paying gate agents between 2022 and 2023 to catch passengers whose bags are a little bit too big.
Okay, let me stop it there for a second. So they're paying these agents at the gate to, they weigh your bag, and if they find that the bag doesn't fit, whatever, or it's borderline, they get a bonus if they disqualify, pull you out of line, and to make you pay for that bag.
I had no idea. That's they get money.
They get paid to do that. Okay, here's more from Mr. Halley.
$26 million. I mean, if people want to know why it's such a terrible experience to fly, this is news for them today. Your airlines are paying millions of dollars to your employees to harass people who've already paid.
Mm-hmm.
They're there in line because they've already paid. It's unbelievable. By the way, let me just ask you this while I have you here. Why is it that you charge different people different fees for carry-on bags? Why is that, Mr. Klein? Why isn't it just a flat fee? Why is it that I might get charged one fee, but my wife might get charged a different fee? Why is that?
So overall, our job is to generate the most revenue we can so we can be profitable as an airline. We have costs, and there's costs out there, and we have to make sure that we're above the cost line in order to make sure that we can run a profitable entity.
There are costs out there. This guy, by the way, is the CEO of Spirit Airlines, which is one of the budget ones.
I'll never fly Spirit again. I used to fly them. I hate them.
There are costs out there, he said. There's magic costs floating in the air. We got to cover those by incentivizing employees to pull you out of line. All right, here's a little bit more.
I got it. And money's the answer. So your carry-on bag fees range between $15 and $99. That's extraordinary. One person might pay $15, somebody else might pay $99. How do you determine it? Is it based on personal characteristics?
It's never. It's never based on personal characteristics.
You charge minors more?
We do not, sir.
What, just people who are suckers? I mean, how do you do it?
Well, there is a cost to carry any kind of bag.
Yeah, but why do you charge some people more? I understand the cost, and you made clear money's your bottom line. I get that. But why is it that you're charging some people, what, triple, quadruple the amount?
Well, the length of the flight should matter in this as well. So
that's not the data. The data shows is we're talking about the same people on the same flight might get charged radically different prices for a one carry-on bag. You do the same thing for check bags.
That's true.
Why is that?
Right. So just for the record, the $99 charge has been reduced to $79 as a maximum.
Wow.
And happening here is we want to make sure that we can get the best price to the best people at the right time.
The best people? Who would they be?
Let me rephrase. The right price.
Are those the people who, what? I mean, no, explain it to me. I'm interested. Who are the best people?
Well, that was the misstatement, sir. What we're trying to do is get the right price at the right time. And what that also means is making sure that if someone's on a flight that's now filling up, and we have a lot of, as we talked about, unbundled pricing.
And they get screwed. So, like, if you have the misfortune of having to book your flight at the end because maybe something's been canceled, then you're going to get screwed. Is that what you're telling me?
Are you referencing just fares?
I'm just responding to your testimony. I'm listening to you. And you just said as a flight's filling up, you're going to get charged more.
Not always. Sometimes you'll get charged less.
Exactly. Sometimes. Right. But you'll never know, right? That's the beauty of it. It's like Russian roulette. Flying on the airline is
I would disagree.
Wait, no idea. You just said it.
It's very transparent.
There'll be a transcript generated, and I'll send it to you with a bow on it. You can read your own testimony just now. You have no idea what the fee is going to be ever.
Yeah.
Wow.
Matthew Hawley is his name. H-A-W-L-E-Y. Howley, I guess. Josh Halley. Sorry. But anyway, he wasn't taking any crap from these guys. He's like, tell me why the fees are different. Well, we best people and the best people. What's a best person?
Yeah.
Does that mean you have to be good looking? Is it racially based?
I believe it's regionally. Also, so somebody told me when you're booking a flight that you should go in incognito mode, and then they don't have the data on you, and they don't know anything about you, and then you just get the rate as the rate.
Isn't it sad that we would have to do that? Isn't it sad that they can say, hey, this guy's from St. George, Utah. I know that they'll pay more, so I'm going to charge him an extra $20 to check his bag.
Yeah, it's true. And then also for like the picking your seat option, I heard like a little go around for that is you go ahead and you go in and you act like you're gonna get all these seats that you don't want, like pick all the middle seats for like whatever your fake flight is, and then it'll hold it in the queue, and then those seats aren't available, And then you go back in and make your actual reservation, and those seats aren't there. And then you can pick the window seats.
Is it possible to get stuck with a bad seat, though, if you're not vigilant?
Well, no, because you get to pick your seat.
Okay.
So you're, like, eliminating the seats you don't want. And then you get the seat that you do want without extra.
No, I understand what you're saying. Yeah, I see it.
But you shouldn't have to... You shouldn't have to fix the system.
Why,
you should
yeah.
just be
Why?
Able to have a fair price.
And that's kind of what this Josh Howley guy was saying. He's like it's like Russian roulette. It's like this magic. It's like the Wheel of Fortune, right? Mm-hmm. You just spin that baby. Maybe more appropriate the wheel at the end of Price is Right, right?
Yes.
Where you're trying to get a dollar,
mm-hmm.
and you hope that it lands on something good.
Yeah, it's true. It's true.
They're killing us.
Yeah. I hate flying. I really don't even like to fly. I'd much rather drive.
Yeah, yeah. I love that we have an airport here in town that can get us to other places that will then up the ante for us. Any more going to a big airport is an unbelievably excruciating experience between all the walking and all the security checks and, you know, board shuttle A and then take train B. And there are honestly literally times where if I wasn't traveling with my wife, neither one of us would have made it. If we were traveling alone, neither one. Because I remembered this part of it, and she remembered that part of it. And we, between our little combined story, we were able to figure it out and get where we needed to go. But without each other, it would have been, I just can't even imagine traveling alone nowadays.
No, it's not fun.
All right, one more commercial break. And then we'll wrap up the show. Got a couple of other things from the news I wanted to talk about. But remember, dark chocolate, good. We'll be right back.
All the latest news, weather, traffic, and sports, just like you like them. You're waking up with the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
Welcome back. I'm Andy Griffin. Mellow is here as well.
Mellow is yellow.
Yeah. Thanks for coming on the show, Mellow.
Thank
Always
you.
Appreciate you having there. A couple of texts I want to get to. Let's see. This one, Spirit and Frontier are a la carte airlines. You should always know that when booking with them, that's why they are cheaper and more attractive when buying the ticket. Let's see.
Their bag size is really small, though, because I did fly them once, and it's like barely a kindergartner backpack size.
This one says the congressman's a little off base. As for the bag, there's a big difference between paying for the check bag when you buy the ticket as opposed to hoping you can take it on board and having to pay at the gate. I, in the industry for decades, and doubt anyone has been profiled. Okay. Hey, Andy, go on YouTube and watch Josh Howley's grilling all these different people that come in front of him over time. He is my favorite senator. I'll have to do that. Watch some other Josh Howley grillings.
Yes.
Because I like his style. All right. Now, you recently got to go to Wicked.
Yeah,
the movie.
This week. Mm-hmm.
How was it? Everybody tells me it was a really good movie.
I really liked it. I took my 7-year-old and he asked me why did
Okay,
it...
7-year-old boy now.
Yeah.
This is kind of a girly movie, right?
Yeah. Well, he wanted to see it because he had just watched another Wizard of Oz.
Okay.
And he asked me, he's like, why do they keep singing to each other?
So Wicked is loosely based on Wizard of Oz?
Well, it's like the precursor to how Glenda became the Good Witch and
oh,
then the Wicked Witch.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
All right.
But I hadn't seen the Wicked play.
No, so I have not either. No.
This was my first experience seeing it, but I thought it was well portrayed. I really enjoy musicals. So
why do they keep singing to each other?
Why do they keep singing? Because they're like face to face singing. He's like, why do they keep singing to each other?
So as far as thumbs up, you would say, yeah, go see it. It's pretty good.
I really enjoyed it.
Because my wife and I have a couple of free movie tickets, and we're thinking about going to something. And
yeah.
Wicked would be worth my time, you think?
It is. It's a little cliffhanger, though, because it's...
Red One, though, is supposed to be really good, too. Have you heard about Red One?
My cousin went to that, and she really, really enjoyed it. But the Rotten Tomatoes on it, the Flixster app, mm-hmm. says it's only like 38%. So I don't know. Hmm. But she said it was really good, and her family loved it.
Okay. Well,
so, that's my next.
I don't know that I'll go see one this weekend, but maybe. Anyway, back to the Wicked thing. This is really fascinating to me. So, about I would say 2 weeks ago, whenever Wicked first came out,
mm-hmm.
I don't know, or it wasn't even out yet. It was about to come out. Mattel made a whole bunch of Wicked dolls, right? For I guess Elphaba and Glinda dolls,
mm-hmm.
And so you make the doll, and they're really cute, and they put them in the fancy box. Some people collect them. They don't even open the box. They collect mm-hmm. them. But on the box, they put, of course, the website on where to find out more about it.
Oh.
Here's the problem. They put, instead of wickedmovie.com, which is the official website of the Wicked Movie, they just put wicked.com.
Uh-oh.
Now, don't go to wicked.com right now, folks. Do not do it. I'm telling you right now, this is a pornographic website. Don't go there. Don't do it.
Especially at work.
And we've talked about it, I think 3 days in a row we talked about it on the news here on the KDXU morning show, is you don't want to go to that website. They screwed up. They pulled them all from the shelves after they had been out for a week or so. And had new boxes made and reboxed them and everything. But
so what's the real thing to see now? Like, what's the real website?
Wickedmovie.com, okay. Not wicked.com. But a few of them, quite a few of them actually got sold before they pulled them, right? Before
so
somebody discovered the problem. So here's the news story from this morning. Mattel is facing a lawsuit after its misprint on its Wicked doll packaging that mistakenly linked to a porn site. The link on the box for the Elphaba and Glinda dolls reads wicked.com instead of the proper URL wickedmovie.com. Mattel pulled the toys and issued an apology, but a South Carolina mom is leading a class action lawsuit. She says her young daughter used an iPhone after getting the doll to visit the link and has since been forever scarred. For life. Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
So talk about a PR nightmare.
That is.
Please, the listeners out there, don't go to wicked.com. Please do not. I'm telling you, stay away from wicked.com.
Gosh.
If you want to learn more about the movie, go to wickedmovie.com.
That's a bad mistake.
Do you know, we were talking about unforgivable screw-ups. Is this, someone's getting fired, right? I mean, this is.
I'm sure somebody's getting fired, or maybe somebody was getting fired, and that's why they did it.
When I was in college, Mello, I worked mm-hmm. for the student newspaper. This is up at Utah State University. And somebody on our staff there was, they were not fired, because you don't really fire someone from a student paper, but so we used to print a student paper and also a community paper. Well, they decided it would be funny, since they were on their way out, to, in the birth announcement pages, have someone with a very vulgar name giving birth to a very vulgar child's name.
Oh,
and
no.
It slipped through all the editors and got through and was printed. I think they printed 9,000 of them or something like that.
Oh, no.
In Logan, Utah. And, it was a kind of a big old middle finger, I guess, by this person who was mm-hmm. being released to. I don't know if they ever actually. I have no follow up on that, and
that's,
I apologize. I don't know whatever happened to them. If they ever got a job in real journalism and not mm-hmm. student journalism, or what happened. But I see what you're saying. Maybe it was an employee who was like, "I'm losing my job anyway. I'm the one in charge of this." Type. Boom, and there you go.
Right, and then you also know, like in Disney movies, some of the animators, they slide in little things into mm-hmm. those that are inappropriate, like
in the
fluff that you don't really see, but if you know what you're looking for, you can see.
Right.
So it's not the first time that has happened.
And how about this for all our conspiracy theorists out there? And you're one of them. Maybe somebody that works for that porno website or was offered some money to promote that porno website
mm-hmm.
and did it on purpose so that they get a whole bunch more hits and be in the news and have people like Andy Griffin talking about mm-hmm. them on the radio on a Friday in the middle of December.
Yeah, I think that could be
it
true.
It could be true.
It could be true. It could be not true. Not be true.
All I know is Mattel has got themselves a major PR nightmare going. Right. I have a feeling that they're so big. They're such a gigantic, like, such a big conglomerate. They could just about kill babies and get away
yeah.
with it.
I think that a lawsuit is a little ridiculous. Like, I think that's a stretch.
No, I agree with you. I agree with you. I mean, we've become a bit too litigious in the society. Mm-hmm. But having said that, Mattel should have never sold any of those.
No, they should have had somebody double, triple check that.
I'm sure they did, but they missed it.
Yeah.
Just like the newspaper vulgar baby.
Yes.
Mello, thanks for coming on today. Great to talk to you.
Okay.
back on Monday. Thanks for listening.